Welcome to Life, Lessons, and Laughter with your host, Glenn Ambrose.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. Here is Aubrey.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. Here is Aubrey, everybody.
Back again.
And she said she likes my shirt.
I do. I like the shirt. Gizmo likes the shirt, right, Giz?
Right. My brother-in-law saw it. I was wearing it one time. My brother-in-law said something about, like, is something about those raisins. It kind of looks like the symbol for the raisins, some brand of raisins.
Now I'm not going to be able to unsee it.
And I never thought of that, of course, you know, when I made the shirt, but as soon as he said it, now that's all I can think of whenever I literally reached in, grabbed it, and I was like, yeah, I'll wear this shirt today. My raisin shirt.
So now it
is forever my raisin shirt, all because of my brother-in-law.
Well,
what can you do?
What can you do? I like it. It's all I'm going to think about now, but it's okay.
Yeah, it's the raisin shirt.
Yeah.
So today we are talking, we are attempting a shot at the long-awaited Spiritual Law podcast. This is the most asked for podcast, the most, probably the most frequent question that I've been asked over the years is about spiritual law, because I use that term. It's just hard to talk about. So the reason that I veered off of this is because, like, I actually, when it first started coming up, I actually started trying to make a list, like maybe even write a book about it, like many years ago. So I started researching and tried writing down the spiritual laws, researching them, making little notes about them. And what I saw was that there's so much overlap with them, that like everything basically in spirituality or the universe is all interconnected. So you just start running into another one as you talk about one, because there's overlap. So as you get deeper and further into the conversation, you come across another spiritual law and another spiritual law, and it just keeps getting deeper and deeper and deeper as you go. And as it gets deeper, it simplifies. So, like, depending on what level you're at, and I don't mean this like somebody's personal spiritual level, I mean by the level that you're talking at, like the level that you're talking at, you could have, I have no flipping idea, 20 spiritual laws. And then as you start talking, you could narrow them down into 10. And then as you keep talking, you can narrow them down into 5. And then you can get down to one, you know? So that's why it's kind of difficult to have this conversation, but we figured we'd give it a shot and see how it goes.
So what are, in your words, what is the definition of spiritual laws? What is it?
And that's a good point too, just because it is my definition. It's not necessarily, other people might have other ones, you know. So my definition is, it's a law is something that works all the time, every time, always, no matter the size of the situation. So that's why I use the term law, because I can count on it working, you know, all the time in every situation. If I understand it and I apply it into a particular situation, I can count on it working. It's duplicatable. You know, so to me, that's what a law is. Spiritual is, you know, of course, the spiritual realm, which is the eternal realm, which other people are more comfortable saying the universe or universal law. To me, they're interchangeable. So it's like it, they're basically laws of that, of how the universe actually works. It's the fundamental laws of how the universe works, you know. And I'm no mathematician, so I'm not going to tell you some universal law of what like keeps the sun a certain distance from the earth. You know what? Hey, who, maybe those are universal laws too. I don't know. I'm not that guy. So, but you know, but like I understand spiritual laws. So, you know, I kind of stumbled into one already. One is, if you want to get further from the truth, you complicate. If you want to get closer to the truth, you simplify. The truth
and
is,
that's two in one.
Yeah. And it's just, that's just the dynamic. Like if you look at something complicated, that's really complicated, it's far from the truth every time. Always. You know, there isn't, like you can't look at something that's really complicated and be like, oh yeah, that's just 100% truth-based. It's not, because if it was truth-based, it would be simple.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
there wouldn't be a lot to figure out.
Right. So if you look at, you know, if you look at some of the examples of this, if you look at like, you know, what are some of the most complicated things that we have in society nowadays? The government. Do you think we have an inkling of truth in our government? Like we have not even a vague hint or idea of what goes on in that government. Just look at one bill. Just look at one, like one thing that they've passed. It'll have like 200-300 pages with all different assets of it. You know, like they go, they go, oh, we're going to come out with some COVID aid. I actually saw, I think Trump, you know, and I'm not promoting any politician. I think they're all jackasses, but like, I think Trump made a big deal out of it once because they were passing some COVID, like to put money towards the COVID issue. And he was like, 3/4 of the stuff has nothing to do with COVID. We're giving Sweden or somebody $100,000 to help with, like, I think it was like some LGBT thing or something. And it's on the COVID bill. It's like, it's like, so
how much more confusing? Yeah. So we're so far from the truth because of all this confusion.
And that's one bill. Mm-hmm. Like just one little thing that they were going to pass to try to get some money for an issue that was ongoing. Like, you know, everything is like that in a government. You know, what else is confusing? Health insurance, taxes. Do you think we're anywhere near the truth there? No. I mean, how could like people, you know, that make hundreds of millions of dollars a year not pay any taxes? And then people that are making $30,000 a year are getting their ass kicked. Like how could that be? Well, it's because they write it in fancy code and make it all complicated so nobody can understand it, except these special accountants that make hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to find the loopholes that were embedded in there. So their rich people that can pay them the hundred thousands of dollars a year don't have to pay the taxes on the million. Like, you know, this is just how it goes. You know, health insurance is the same thing. Car insurance is the same thing. Insurance is one of the biggest rackets. It's like you pay money in case something happens.
Yeah, just in case.
And they pass a law that says you have to. And then they don't regulate it. You know?
I know.
So then it gets more and more complicated and more and more complicated.
Yeah. We're further and further from the truth.
Further and further from the truth. Right. So, you know, so those are the things that you know, that's how, when you get, if you look at the things that are complicated and you wonder why you can't figure them out, you know, and sometimes people say that to me. They'll come to me with an issue and they're like, well, it's really complicated. I go, no, it's not. It's really freaking simple. You're caught up in the surface that looks complicated. That's why you can't figure it out. If you go underneath and get to the truth, it's really simple. This is why, like, a lot of couples will argue about things. They have issues in their marriage.
Like, yeah.
You know, it's not the issues.
It never is.
It's not about what you're arguing about. You know, a lot of times, you know, and this isn't every case, but just one example of simplifying a lot of issues is it's about respect.
Yeah.
Like, because so you can take 150 different issues and boil them all down to the same thing, a lack of respect for one another in a relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, so a lot of times when I'm working with couples or with somebody that's have relationship issues, it's like, stop talking about the thing, because you guys disagree on the thing, you know. And I'll just use the toilet seat for the example. Like, a guy doesn't have to understand. He literally doesn't have to understand or agree that the toilet seat should be left down, to leave it down. He could think that that's the stupidest thing in the world and still put the toilet seat down.
Right.
Why?
Because it's about
respect. Out of respect for your partner. That's why. Mm-hmm. Because it's something that they want you to do and it affects their life. And I don't care if you agree with it or if you don't agree with it. It's a simple little thing you can do out of respect for your partner. So it's about respect. It's not about the thing. Well, I disagree. It shouldn't be. Who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares if you agree?
What should or shouldn't. Right.
Yeah. It's like, is it hurting you to put it down? No.
Yeah.
Then put it down.
Yeah.
Just out of respect.
Exactly. Know? Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not detracting from your life. So just do it out of sheer respect. You know, so this is how, you know, and, you know, lots of, you know, we won't go too far down this road, but then people go, no, but this one's complicated. No, it's not.
Yeah.
Whatever you think is complicated isn't complicated. It is, as long as unless you want to get to the truth, you know, I'm talking, if you want to get to the truth, it's not complicated. If you want to stay away from the truth, then yes, it's very complicated.
Yeah. Yeah. Depends on where you want to be.
And that works in every situation all the time, always. It works when you're talking about, you know, look at the examples we just gave. We talked about a toilet seat. I would say that that's pretty microcosm. We talked about the government.
Yeah.
That's fairly macrocosm.
Right.
So, and it's the exact same scenario that applies always in every situation. Oh, and it applies to every situation in between the toilet seat and the government.
Right. So that's the constant, and everything else is just a variable. It's just plug and play.
So this is, you know, this is how my mind always worked. You know, I didn't realize this. You know, I don't know when I realized this. Somebody kind of pointed it out to me. I remember, like, 6 years ago or something. They were like, because they got a kick out of how crazy I was when I was younger, but they also were interested in spirituality. So we would go out and they'd be like, they'd just get a kick out of listening to me tell stories, which is my forte. So I'll tell freaking stories all day. So we go, and they are like, your mind has worked the same way your whole life. And I'm like, really? What do you mean? And they brought up some of my stories in there. Yeah. Like, you were just using it for evil before that. But you got to the core, you know?
Yep.
And it's, and I looked at it and I was like, yeah, it's true. I would always go to the end result. I would always go to the simplest common denominator and then just work off of that, you know? So I would just understand a dynamic. This is how I used to, like, I used to get around authority all the time. It was my pastime, you know, it was like a creative outlet to try to figure out how to get around authority while I was growing up, you know, my parents, school, police, everything. So it was like, so I would look and I'd figure out the dynamic of it. And I'd be like, oh, okay. So it would interest me. I'd be like, you know, how does, I want to leave school, but I can't. So what are the dynamics? So I would start looking into the dynamics of that. What are the policies around this? How does it work? And I'm like, well, I get kicked out of school when I get in trouble for 3 days and I go home. You know, this was before they had the in-school suspension. So I'm like, so why don't I just do something? So why don't I just go in and tell them, hey, I'm going to do something bad unless you let me leave.
Using, you know, your powers for evil. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, I just want to go home. I don't feel like being in school. So like, if they tell me I can't, I'll just go follow through with the thing that I threatened them with, and then they'll kick me out and then I'll get the 3 days off.
Right.
Made perfect sense to me, you know, but other people's brains apparently don't think like this, you know?
Apparently.
So I went into the principal's office and that's what I did. I was like, hey, I don't feel like being here. I'm just going to head out. I need you to give me a few days off. And he was like, that's not how it works. And I'm like, yeah, it kind of does. And he's like, no, it doesn't. I'm like, yeah, it does. Because like, I'll just go, you know, that fire extinguisher outside the office, I'll just spray it up and down the hallway and you'll send me home for 3 days. So how do you want to play this? Shall I go get the fire extinguisher, or could I just go home for 3 days and we can just both skip that and the cleanup process? Cause it's going to be messy, man. And nobody wants to deal with that.
You know? How old were you?
I was older here. I was like 16.
Oh man.
I was in high school then.
And this was what, your principal? Who was it? Your principal?
Yeah, I was the principal.
Man.
And he was like,
you're definitely the subject of many dinner conversations.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, so, you know, so he was like, okay, it was a Thursday. I remember it was a Thursday. And he said, you can go home Thursday and Friday, but you got to be back Monday. And I was like, no way. That's a day and a half. I get at least 3 days suspension whenever I get kicked out. And he got mad because I was negotiating with him, you know. He's like, no, you get your time off, but you're not going to tell me how many days. You got a day and a half. Get out of here. You had to
maintain a little bit of control. It's like, you're not going to get
this. So I gave him his nugget and I took the day and a half.
No, you took the day and then I called out. Then I called out. Yeah. Okay, so.
So I took the day and a half. But this is, so I always did this. So my brain's always like worked, you know, and I did that with tons of situations. I mean, yeah. I did that consistently. I did that with how I interacted with people. I did that with how I drove. I did it with all kinds of stuff. I would just look and understand the scenario and be like, okay, what's the ground rules for this one? And how do I manipulate them in my favor?
Right.
And boom, it was always right there. So yeah, I was somewhat frustrating. But now I use it for good. So, you know, so I can understand. So it's, you know, a lot of that, of course, had to do with my spiritual awakenings 19 years ago. That's when I really started understanding this stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, consciously and being able to look at things and be like, oh my God. And this is what was so crazy, is life got really simple all of a sudden. Because like, I literally woke up spiritually and understood the secrets of the universe. Like, I was like, oh my God, I understand how the universe works. This is insane.
Yeah. Like, you know? You gotta tell everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, first I had to learn how to, like, I got it conceptually. So I just conceptually just understood stuff. I didn't have the words to explain it. And I had to practice learning to live it. You know, like another podcast I did is this three levels, you know, intellectual learning, conceptual learning, and physical learning. So that's when you really got something is, and it can happen in any order. So when I woke up conceptually, like inside, I just knew everything. I knew these secrets of the universe and stuff. And I just got it. But like, I didn't know how to live by standing in it. So I had to practice living and interacting with life according to these new laws that I understood. You know, and that took some time and, oh, okay. And then as I did that, I started intellectually understanding and I started devouring books and learning terminology to start expressing it, you know? So I kind of learned it conceptually first and then the other ways, you know, afterwards, but that's the, you know, that's the foundation of all this stuff. I think I like touched on something else too.
It was the yin and yang of that spiritual wall, like the two blended together.
So the yin and the yang. So closer to the truth to simplify.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. The opposite, the equal, but opposite.
So if you want to get closer to the truth, now we can't talk about this too much because we go all the way down to the bottom. You know, where I was saying there was overlap and then all of a sudden it just gets simpler and simpler and simpler. Well, if we simplify, we keep going lower. So like ultimately, if you keep simplifying everything, like you start seeing that everything beneficial towards the universe and its components, which is us, the earth, the planet, everything, everything that makes up the universe, anything that's beneficial towards that is a version of love. Anything that's detrimental towards that is a version of fear.
Yeah.
You know, so like anger is a version of fear, you know, when you start understanding that, when you simplify, because like, how do you deal with somebody that's angry? It's difficult, right? Because up here, angry is more complicated because we don't have a full understanding of it. And there's lashing out and there's inappropriate behavior and there's this and there's that. And there's all different ways of different personalities. There's passive aggressiveness. There's all kinds of, it's complicated up here. But if you start going lower and you start getting down towards fear and you go, oh, my God, it's just a different reaction to fear. They're scared.
Yeah.
Oh, all of a sudden now you're getting down to the core of it. If you treat that core, if you take care of the core, the thing that's causing the anger, if you take, which is fear. You know, like if you have somebody angry and you say you shouldn't be angry, that's not going to go over well, right? If you try to match their anger, that's not going to go over well. If you try to tell them, you know, what most things aren't going to meet people in a good place as long as they're angry. But if you go underneath it and find a way to calm their fear, all of a sudden their anger diminishes.
Starts to dissipate. Yeah.
Right.
So you're neutralizing.
Right. So what did you do? So you brought in. So most times what people do when there's a negative energy, they try to bring in negative energy. This is why a lot of the stuff with, you know, we look at all the political issues, you know, all the political problems in the world and and we go, okay, they're bad, they're wrong, and we're going to fight them. And everybody gets all angry on their soapbox because they're talking about love. And these people are talking about greed. Like, you know, we'll pick a kind of a random topic. Just like somebody's, there's some greedy company that's just, you know, treating people like crap or, you know, not, or the government's not taking care of its people. It's just sucking money out of them or something like that. And then you have these other people that go, oh, that shouldn't be happening. Screw them. We're going to get them. We're going to teach them that that ain't right. So now you have you have fear energy, which is actually fear of lack, which is greed. So you have a negative energy, and then you bring in more negative energy.
Yeah. It's going to go.
What happens? Yeah. What it just creates a bigger ball of negative energy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is why, like, you know, when Mother Teresa was invited to the anti-war rally, she said, no, I won't go. But if you have a pro-peace rally, I'll be the first one there. She understood energy. She understood energy, topic. The universe doesn't understand pro or against. It understands energy, topic. So this is why whenever we declare war on something, it expands, because we collectively put a bunch of energy towards it. And we go, yeah, but we're fighting against it. Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You're putting energy towards the topic. So it expands. You know, how's the war on drugs going?
Right. Exactly.
It's expanded ever since we declared war on it. Right.
Just feeding it. And so to remove, we starve.
Right. Or we either starve or even what's even more powerful is we bring in love. Mm. And if you bring in, because that's what dissipates fear. Because so if we go to the final drop, there's no such thing as fear. Yeah. Fear is simply absence of love.
Mm.
It's just like lightness in the dark. Darkness isn't a thing. It's just absence of light. You can't grab darkness and bring it into a room.
Yeah.
So it's intangible. It's not a thing. You can bring light into a room.
Right.
And there's no battle. The light doesn't fight the darkness. You know, this is like, and that's one of the things that people have talked about in religion, you know, not spiritual loving religion, messed up, confused religion. Oh, there's a huge fight between light and dark. No, there isn't. No, there's not. There never has been, and there never will be, and there can't be. Because as soon as you bring light in, it's no longer dark. There isn't a fight. If I walk into a room with a candle, something doesn't come try to blow out the candle.
The light is, there's no more darkness.
It's just light now. It's the same with love and fear. If you bring in love, it just where'd the fear go? I don't know. It was here a minute ago.
Yeah.
So that's even the more powerful thing we can do. And we can see this where we've in the macrocosm, where we've experienced large social change. If you look, a lot of times people don't look at the dynamic that caused this large social change. They just look at the social change. And they make a snap judgment on it. So if you go deeper and look at the dynamics, the spiritual law that actually induced the large social change, you can see it's love. Martin Luther King made great strides. Why? Because he preached love. He even said it. He said that hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that.
Wow. He understood spiritual law.
Exactly. And that's why he made so much ground. That's why he made such an impact. He didn't fight against his oppressors. He brought his oppressors in and had a conversation with them.
Mm.
He didn't. And when Martin Luther King Jr. sat in a room with his oppressor, he wasn't sitting there going, "You're wrong. You suck. You shouldn't be doing this." That's not what he was doing.
Yeah.
That wasn't his energy. That wasn't his speech. He tried to connect with them through love and go, we're people. We, you know, obviously, if you're causing so much problems that your oppressor brings you in to have a conversation, you're making an impact already.
Yeah.
So when he got there and he had these conversations with them, he knew he was making an impact. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been in that room.
Right.
So what was he preaching? Nonviolence. So then he gets in the room and he tries to connect with them. try to figure out a solution. Gandhi did the same thing. You know, now I don't know if this specific line is true from the Gandhi movie, but the energy, it's a great example of the energy that Gandhi used. Again, nonviolence. He didn't fight his oppressors. That's anger versus anger. Nothing gets accomplished there except more anger.
Right. Right? He brought love. So
he brought love and what and self-love and the love is of the Indian people as a group. And he stood in that love. And in the movie, like I said, I don't know if this if he actually said this, but it's a good representation of what I'm talking about. Like he was in prison and they brought him in and they were like, hey, like, what do you want, man? Like, you know, you're causing a big, you're a big pain in the ass. What do you want? And he said, we want you to leave. And they're like, well, we're not going to leave. You know, we're the British government. We control India. We own you. We're in control. So we're not going to just leave. And he said, yes, you will. He said, you'll leave and you'll leave of your own accord. And they're like, why would we possibly leave of our own accord? He said, because there's no reason for you to stay. You can't control us. What good is a government that can't control its people? It's a waste. It's a waste of your time. It's a waste of your energy. It's a waste of your money. And eventually you'll see that it's a waste because you can't control us. And you'll just leave of your own accord. We won't fight you to get you out. You'll just decide to leave on your own accord. And he walked out of the room in the movie and they all started laughing at him. Yeah, right. Look at this little guy. What's he thinking? We're just going to pick up and leave this gigantic country that we control for no apparent reason without a fight. Yeah, right. That's going to happen. And that's exactly what they did. There was no military solution. It was a love solution. Mm. You know, which kind of... Which they did a study, the RAND Institute did this study. I heard Michael Bernard Beckwith talking about this, that there is no military solution to terrorism at all. There's no military solution. The only solution that they found to terrorism was when there was enough food, shelter, clothing, and education for the people in that area, terrorism dissolved. It just disappeared. Just went away.
Wow. That's very interesting.
Yeah. And what is that?
The needs are being met. Yeah.
Their basic needs are being met. So then they're not pissed off trying to fight a government that's oppressing them.
Yeah. That desperation is taken out of the picture. Mm-hmm.
So somebody gives them a gun and says, hey, go shoot those people. They're like, why?
Right.
They drop back into their humanness. Mm. You know? They drop back into their real self. We get pushed to violence, you know, through anger and hate.
Yeah. You know, but once that's removed,
That's removed. And it's the same thing with Nelson Mandela. You know, he was in prison, 28, 29 years. Mm-hmm. And you know how much progress they made in the first 20? None. Right. Because he was angry. Right. You know, if you listen to Mandela talk about what happened, he changed when he was in jail. He was a very angry person when he went. And he worked through that and got on the other side of that. And once he got on the other side of that, then when he went in and had conversations with his oppressor, he connected with them, human to human. And then they figured out how to transcend the issues that they were having together. And he ended up the president when he got out.
Like, all you can't make this stuff up. Understood universal law.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is love. At the end, at the bottom of everything, it's just love. And this is why, like, this is why I don't get involved with the law of, a lot of social causes. In the way that most people are getting, like, I'll get involved with social causes, but I will get involved in them in my own way, at my own level, and at my own pace. But like the classic, what, you know, people you know, people have me hear me talking about love. And then with all the controversy that was going on in the United States and the protests and all this stuff, they're like, Glenn, you should be out there with us. And I'm like, no, I shouldn't. Because you people are freaking angry.
Yeah.
And that's not going to solve this.
No.
It's not going to solve it. Love can solve it. Anger can't solve it. So the first thing that we need to do is stay calm and get ourselves in the energy of love and then bring that to the table. There's no fight for that. They can't fight against love.
Yeah, there's nothing. There's no bat. There's nothing to fight. There's no pushback.
Right.
It's like.
And that's just, so that's in the macrocosm, and you can bring it into the microcosm. You know, it's like when somebody's sitting there and going like, you know, like putting like, you know, try to find something simple, like minimizing somebody, putting them down, treating them like crap. Mm-hmm. And then somebody just goes, yeah, I don't like it when you talk to me like this. I'm just going to leave. Well, what's that person? No, you're not. No, you just leave. Like,
yeah.
What are they going to do? Right. You know? They can't argue with you. They can't. You know, they can't fight you. They can't. I mean, there's nothing to do. You know,
yeah.
And people do that. Like bosses do this all the time. They have this illusion that they have control over other people. And then they're like, oh, you have to do this. No, that's not part of my job. I'm not going to do that. Oh, you don't understand. What? No, I understand. I just don't fall into society's BS idea that if somebody in power says something, then I have to listen. Didn't that go out like in the 40s or something?
Aren't we a little beyond this?
Yeah, like, but a lot of bosses still think, you know, like they can tell people what, you know, I won't go into the actual stories, but I had three jobs before I started my business. And every one of those jobs, I was told that there was a mandatory meeting that I needed to go to. And every time it was when I was spending time with my son. I spent a lot of time with my son.
Yeah.
So if I wasn't working, I was usually with him. So if they had a mandatory meeting on a time that I wasn't working, then I was probably with him. So I was just like, I can't go.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, you don't understand. It's a mandatory meeting. And I'm like, well, it depends on what your definition of mandatory is. Like you think
it's your mandatory. Day off. Yeah.
That's... Yeah. Like, to me, my principles are my son and my job is underneath my son. So what's mandatory is that I go hang out with my kid. So to me, this isn't a mandatory meeting. It doesn't meet the criteria of mandatory. What's mandatory is that I go spend time with my child, you know? So, I mean, now, do I understand that there could be consequences? Yes, I fully understand that. You have the right to fire me. You have that right. We just have an agreement that I show up, do some work, and you give me some money. We can both end that agreement at any time. So if you don't like my choice, you have the right to fire me. And maybe you will. Maybe you won't. I don't know. We'll see. But I ain't going to be at that meeting. I can tell you that.
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't have to. Right.
No. And I didn't go to any of those meetings and I never got fired. I never got any disciplinary action.
Right.
Because I didn't have a leg to stand on.
Yeah.
You know, no, it's, and I believe I didn't care about the law because I was just doing it for personal reasons. So if they fired me, I was just going to go find another job. Like, I mean, jobs were supposedly scarce back then. One thing I've learned being an alcoholic for 20 years, you can always find a job.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
you can make money doing anything if you're desperate enough.
Yeah, you can go out there and find a job. You can find a freaking job.
Go walk some dogs. Go do whatever you got to do. It's your why, you know, what that drive is behind it and how,
Right. So, but they use fear
or whatever.
They use fear to control you. Oh, if you lose this job, you know, that, you know, back then they had a meeting one time, went up my ass sideways because at this meeting, they literally were threatening people. And most of the workforce was kids right out of college. It was their first job. And I was one of the few older ones. And they're sitting there telling these kids, if you lose this job, you're screwed. You're not going to be able to make your car payment. You don't understand how good you have it. You better work hard. And these kids were busting their ass. I mean, busting their ass for these people. And they just kept pushing them for more and more and more and threatening them with fear tactics. I went around to every single kid, every little office cubicle. I went to every single one of them after that meeting. And I go, don't you freaking listen to them. They're full of crap. Mm-hmm. You can get another job with less pressure, making at least this amount of money, if not more, tomorrow.
Yeah.
Don't worry 100%. About it, you know, because it's true. You can.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But that's the fear tactic. You know, but I loved myself. I loved my son. What were they going to do? No, like argue with me?
Yeah. What's the worst that could happen? Really? To the worst case scenario. And yeah.
And just to be clear, I consider myself a spiritual realist. So like when I'm working with clients and when I talk about stuff like this, I'm not implying that everybody should, every time a boss says something to you that you don't like, you should just turn around, tell them to go screw and see if they fire you. Like we have life responsibilities, use your head, you know,
right.
Like usually like what we can do is if we find out that the place that we're working doesn't care about us, which most of them honestly don't.
Yeah.
And rightfully so to some degree, like I said, it's just an agreement that we go do some work and they give us some money. That's it. It's nothing more than that. They don't owe us our life. You know,
yeah.
They're not supposed to be the stewards of our life and whether we're happy or not. That's our job. You know? But you can, most times if you're working for a company that treats you like crap, you just start looking for another job and you find another one before you tell them to go screw. That's all.
Yeah.
You know? It's usually more of a realistic way.
More realistic. Yeah. I like that.
Macrocosm, microcosm. Let's see what else. Everything beneficial is a version of love. Everything detrimental is a version of fear. And I'm not going to get too much into this, quite honestly, because I understand it conceptually really well. Not super at the intellectual understanding of it. So, but there's this guy that, where is it? There it is. That wrote this book, Power Versus Force. If anybody's not heard of this guy, he's pretty amazing. David Hawkins. And he has this whole system of literally doing kinesiology muscle testing on... Ooh. And he created a chart where they can test everything for truth or detriment. And I mean, everything. Like they tested every sentence and every paragraph in this book. They tested. That's why it's such a dense read. It's the hardest book I've ever read. It's so dense. But it's all straight truth. They tested Jesus's statements. They tested the Declaration of Independence. They tested periods of time in human history. They test everything through muscle testing. It's insane.
Crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's and very interesting.
It's and that's the tip of the iceberg, man. I mean, you dive into that, it's really interesting. It's insane. They said, I believe he said in the mid-80s, somewhere around the mid-80s was the first time that humankind was actually beneficial towards itself. It had shifted from being detrimental to beneficial towards itself for the first time in human history in the mid-80s.
Wow. That's wild.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
Which I think it's because of the spiritual shift that started probably around, I guesstimate, around 1960 with the hippies. Yeah. They came in and, you know, shook longstanding structures like corporate mm-hmm. America and structured religion, you know, organized government, all that stuff. They shook all that stuff. It's never been the same. People have questioned things. Before that, nobody questioned organized government or corporate right. America or organized religion. You didn't question that.
No.
You got backhanded if you thought about questioning it.
Yeah. You're trained to not. Yeah.
Right. So, and I mean, of course, people questioned it throughout history, but I'm talking about a large enough group of people, because the hippie movement was not just the United States. It was all over the globe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's the first time in human history that we had that many people questioning longstanding structures. And I believe that's what shook it and really started things. So by the mid-80s was the first time that we had changed enough as social beings and the way we looked at life and questioned enough things to actually start becoming beneficial towards ourselves,
right?
As a race of humans. So,
yeah.
So there.
Yeah. That's and I can see how they all, you know, blend into one another. Do you have a list of all of the ones that you have so far? Maybe you can read them.
Well, most of them I touched on already. So yeah, it was
just in like list form.
Yeah. So I talked about simplify to get closer to the truth, complicate to get further from the truth. Mm-hmm. Everything beneficial is a version of love. Everything detrimental is a version of fear. Fear is absence of love. Taking that one more step. And then a couple more. You can't transcend something until until you accept it or make peace with it.
Ooh, that's a good one.
I'll get into that a little bit more. All suffering is resistance to what is. Mm-hmm. And non-attachment to an outcome.
Ugh.
I think that's
live by that. All of them. Try and live by that every day.
Yeah, these are, you know, and you know what, one of the most profound spiritual books and most helpful spiritual books that I feel is the Four Agreements.
You literally read my mind. I was just thinking that.
Do you see how simple that is?
Yes.
Four profound things that will change your life. Four. Yeah. And they're simple, they're easy to understand. The book is great.
Yeah.
But they're just four things, you know, that's why, like, I mean, you can pick any, and know what's funny, that is when I was reading that book, I was laughing because Don Miguel Ruiz, he mm-hmm. says, I believe in more places than one in that book about more agreement than one. He says, if you just live this one, it will change your life.
Mm.
You
know, that.
If you just live this one, it will change your life. And he says, and he doesn't say it about one. He says it about multiple. Why?
Right.
Because they're so powerful as they stand alone.
Yeah.
You know,
you're going to see an impact even from just one.
Because they are so close to the truth.
Right.
They're so powerful. The closer you get to the truth, the more powerful they are.
Yeah.
You know, and they're rooted in simplicity. So, wow, big surprise that they're powerful, you know?
Yeah.
So you can't transcend something until you accept it or make peace with it. It's like, you know, we're a lot of times we struggle against stuff, right? So we're putting energy towards what we don't want.
Yeah.
So this is why, like, we have to make peace with it. It's like, this is why it kind of feels like there's spiritual levels, even though there isn't. Because once we get into a new spiritual lesson, we actually have to learn it and stand in it before we can transcend it.
Right.
You know, we have to actually embody it.
From like that first part. Yeah. You need to experience.
Yeah. So you can learn it intellectually.
Yeah.
You can be like, oh, this is what I need to learn to make my life happier. And your life doesn't get better then. And then you go, oh, well, you know, then you hear somebody talk about it in a different way and you go, oh, now I get it in here.
Yeah.
Your life still doesn't change. What happens is the universe gives you an opportunity to stand in it. And then you stand in it. You stand in a situation that you used to handle dysfunctionally, and you stand it in it and you handle it in a functional, healthier way. Then you transcend it. Because that's what changes your vibration.
I see.
You know, so this is why we have to stand it. This is why, you know, we can't be sitting there going, oh my God, it's horrible. I have no money. It's horrible. I have no money. It's horrible. I have no money. And then all of a sudden wake up and have a bunch of money. Like, yeah, you're not, as long as your problem is that you're fearful about money and you're pushing it away, you're sabotaging yourself. You're doing, you know, all this stuff, you're blocking it from coming in. You're literally blocking it, you know?
Right.
So you have to transcend that stuff. Then when you make peace, it opens and all of a sudden the money starts flowing in. It's like, oh.
Right. Makes total sense. Yeah. I see that a lot in my, like I see it happening in real time in my life. And it's just, it's really crazy. Because I'll be in these moments where like I'm focusing on maybe something not positive, you know, like if something's bothering me and I'm just like in the moment and I'm like, the more I think about this, the more it's going to happen. And I'm going to do this to myself. And then I'm just like in it. And I'm like, I got to get out of it. And I'm like, just try. And it's just like, I'm like trying to get out. And that's the only thing, is the overthinking in it, you know? Cause it's
right.
Like,
you can't. Yeah. Yeah. But see, because that's still feeding it, which, so it's, it's when you think you don't, once, so that bleeds right into the other one, resistance. All suffering is resistance to what is, you know, we're resisting it, and whatever we resist persists. So it expands, you know, so what can you do? And people get caught up because they don't know what to do. So what you got to do is stop, center, enter into love, and then bring love to the situation.
Yeah.
Like you can't fight fear. And you can't just stop thinking about fear, or like, you know, you got to replace. So I guess that's another spiritual law, is it's replacement. It's very hard to stop doing something. So I'm not sure if this is a spiritual law or not, but it's like, it's very difficult to not do something. So what you got to do is replace. If I'm caught up in fear, then I can't be like, okay, I have to not be in fear. No, I don't even know what that looks like, but I can go anchor into love and then come at the situation in a love energy. Mm-hmm. You know, what would love look like when it comes into here?
The focus towards the love and not so much what does removing love... the fear. Like the fear can stay and just chill there while I redirect my focus. What, love.
While I go anchor in love.
Yeah, like I'm not going to look at this. I'm just going to look over here. And eventually when I look back, it won't really be there, kind of.
Well, I'll anchor into love and bring it right over into it.
There we go. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the fear just, where was the fear? It was here a minute ago.
Yeah, totally.
So let's see. I'm going to see if I can touch on these last two real quick, cause we're running out of time. So all suffering is resistance to what is. So yeah, like, you know, if we're emotionally suffering, and I venture to say like 90% of our suffering is resistance. You know, I mean, is there some emotional suffering that we'll experience? Yeah. You know, I mean, if somebody dies that you love and you experience a level of sadness because they're no longer here, I mean, there's a certain aspect of that that's natural and there's nothing wrong with it. It's okay to feel sad because you know, you like them being in the physical body, even if you understand that they're okay and, you know, and everything's fine, you can still experience a level of sadness, but it's not real suffering until you start resisting it. When you start saying that there's something wrong that they died, they shouldn't have died, or I'm never going to be okay again because they died, or that's all resistance. When you start resisting it, that brings in 90% of the suffering.
Yeah. Right. And that's almost, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy too.
Oh yeah, this is why. Like,
I'll never get over this.
One of my friends died like 5 years ago, and I was talking with his sister and his longtime girlfriend for a while. I still do. And in the beginning, all I said was just hold out hope that maybe someday, possibly in the far, far future, if all the planets line up and everything works perfectly on a sunny day with the birds chirping, that maybe possibly you might be able to experience a moment, a sliver of happiness, maybe. Just hang on to that. That's enough. Because that keeps that door open.
Yeah.
It's when you shut the door and you go, no, I will never be happy. I will never find peace. I will never be okay. Then you're screwed because you just wrote yourself into a prison.
Right.
You know? So just leaving and then let time work you through that grief and all that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So, and then the last one. Non-attachment to the outcome. I mean, it's like, I mean,
that's everything, right?
Gigantic.
There.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything.
We can't be attached to any outcome. And
yeah,
I don't know if I did a podcast on that. Did it? If I didn't, we could just do one on that.
Did you see my face? I was like,
Scooby-Doo moment.
It was like a Scooby-Doo moment.
It was like,
I just heard, I was like, oh, that sounds like a good topic for the future. Yeah. Because that's, it really is everything. It is. It's disattaching from the fear. It hits every angle. And you're right. They do really all blend together. They boil down to what? Love and fear, right?
Yeah. And even further than that, they boil down to love.
Just love.
That's it. Everything's just love. We're either in it, or we're resisting it, or struggling it, or against it, or blocking it out, or whatever. Mm-hmm. So just you land back in love. That's it, man. All right, that's the end.
All righty.
All right. Thank you, Aubrey. Thank you, everybody. Here goes the ending.
Looking for more? Check out over 200 episodes of Life Lessons and Laughter, or click the link in the description of this episode to connect with Glenn directly.